We would like to acknowledge that the land which we are gathered on today is the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe Nation, specifically the Chippewa Tri-Council, comprised of the Chippewas of Beausoleil, Rama, and Georgina Island First Nations, and more recently, the Mississaugas of the Credit River First Nation. Ontario is covered by 46 treaties and other agreements and is home to many Indigenous nations from across Turtle Island, including the Inuit and the Métis. These treaties and other agreements, including the One Dish with One Spoon Wampum Belt Covenant, are agreements to peaceably share and care for the land and its resources. Other Indigenous nations, Europeans, and newcomers were invited into this covenant in the spirit of respect, peace, and friendship. Most of us have come here as settlers, immigrants, or newcomers in this generation or generations past. We are all treaty people. Every day, we are mindful of broken covenants, and we strive to make this right. We commit to collaborating based on the foundational assumption that Indigenous peoples have their power, strength, and competency to develop culturally specific strategies for their communities. We are dedicated to honoring Indigenous self-determination, history, and culture, and are committed to moving forward in the spirit of reconciliation and respect with all First Nation, Métis, and Inuit people.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Beyond the Stethoscope, the podcast where we delve into the heart of hospice palliative care. My name is Lori Gill, and I am the education specialist at North Simcoe Muskoka Hospice Palliative Care Network, and I will be your host today as we explore a topic that is so important and often overlooked. We will be examining the unique challenges and needs of vulnerable populations in the context of palliative care. We are joined today by an esteemed guest who will bring her expertise and insights into this complex topic. Please give a warm welcome to Rachel LaPonzi. I am thrilled to have you here today with us. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Lori. Happy to be here, as always.
Great. Can you give us a brief overview of the article we are discussing today, Palliative Care for Vulnerable Populations, Bice and Chokanev? 2012?
Sure. And it's actually Steinstra and Chalkinoff. And yes, it was an article from 2012. And the article basically examines the unique challenges and the needs of vulnerable populations within the context of palliative care. And as you know, I'm a palliative care nurse. I have been a palliative nurse for many, many years. And, you know, vulnerable populations and the inequities that they face when trying to receive a palliative approach to care is numerous, which is why I'm just highlighting it for the podcast today. I think it's a topic that is underspoken about, but is very highly needed. I'm going to go off topic just before I talk a little bit about the summary of the article, because I want to really highlight for the audience that's listening today, what we as health service providers have a role and responsibility to provide to the patients and families that we're looking after. You know, vulnerable populations are everywhere. They're in every community. And if we think about some of the inequities that we see in our own communities, I live in the Bay Area area, and I see things like this all the time. I see vulnerable populations having limited access to services. They encounter barriers in accessing palliative care services because of where they live geographically, a lack of transportation, a shortage of healthcare facilities in underserviced areas. Financial barriers create limitations for those that need palliative care. The high cost of healthcare services can sometimes prohibit many from receiving what they so adequately deserve. Vulnerable populations might lack insurance or financial means to afford the necessary treatments or support, medications, transportation to get to those clinics to be able to receive that care. There is a lack of awareness and information for those that are a vulnerable population. There's misunderstandings about what palliative care entails, the benefits of it, and this prevents individuals from seeking these services. cultural and language barriers. We have an awful lot of individuals who speak different languages and are from different cultures within Canada itself. These cultural differences and language barriers hinder communication between the healthcare provider and the patient, leading to underutilization of services and the lack of culturally sensitive care. I also see in my community that, you know, healthcare providers may have limited training in the delivery of palliative care, particularly those that require unique needs, such as those that are vulnerable. You know, those that are vulnerable, there's language barriers. There's a need to provide trauma-informed care. There's stigmas and discrimination that are associated with these vulnerable populations. And we as health service providers need to have the know-how of how to address these issues for these individuals without causing more harm. I do see factors such as poverty, unstable housing, lack of social support. All of these social determinants of health exacerbate these health inequalities. And we also see those that are vulnerable a lot of times have caregivers that may live in other locations. Maybe they don't have good relationships with them. These vulnerable individuals may be quite isolated within their communities. So that lack of support from their caregivers certainly impacts the quality of care as well. And then we know definitely when it comes to pain and symptom management, vulnerable populations may experience inadequate pain and symptom management just due to biases within the pain assessment process in itself from health service providers. A lot of times there's underprescribing of pain medications. There's a lack of access to specialized palliative care providers that do have that insight. There's barriers to accessing medications. And of course, if they don't have insurance or benefits or financial resources in order to be able to cover things like that, or if there's safety and security reasons within the community where they're housed, that it's unsafe to have certain medications, there's processes that need to be put in place to make sure that these individuals can still utilize the medications that they require in the areas in which they're located. So I kind of got off right the tangent there, but I think that really highlights what we see in our communities and why it's such a priority to address palliative care for the vulnerable populations. I did read an article by Steinstra and Chokhanov, and it was from 2012. And the article examines, again, the unique challenges and needs of vulnerable populations in the context of palliative care. But focuses on vulnerable populations and the barriers that those individuals face. It highlights vulnerable populations, including those with disabilities, mental health issues, the elderly, those that are disadvantaged socially and economically, those that face significant barriers to access to palliative care in general, and some of those I've mentioned. These barriers include healthcare resources, social stigma, discrimination, and a lack of tailored services that address the specific needs of these groups. Accessibility to palliative care was identified as a key theme by the authors, who basically stated that vulnerable populations often have limited access to palliative care due to these systemic healthcare inequities. This can result from geographic differences, financial differences, social barriers that prevent these individuals from receiving timely and appropriate care. Quality care was identified as a key theme by the authors, stating the quality of palliative care for vulnerable populations can be compromised due to the lack of specialized training among healthcare providers. This includes understanding their unique needs and the circumstances of these groups. There really has to be knowledge and education to health service providers on how to provide the most appropriate care for these unique individuals. It has to be trauma-informed, it has to be culturally sensitive, and it has to be relative to the needs of each individual. The authors suggest that palliative care is required for this population of individuals, not just the physical aspects of care, but also their psychological needs, their social needs, and their spiritual support. because the needs of this population of individuals is comprehensive. If we think of the disciplines that would be required to provide a palliative approach to care to vulnerable populations, it's not just nurses, it's not just physicians, it's not just PSWs, it's social workers, it's allied health, it's non-licensed disciplines, it's group home workers, it's everybody that comes in contact with these vulnerable populations has to have some semblance of understanding of what a palliative approach to care is.
That's so true, Rachel. So how does advocacy and policy development play a role in improving palliative care access for vulnerable populations?
Well, from what Steinstra and Chalkanoff 2012 suggest, there is a call for stronger advocacy and policy initiatives that will ensure that palliative care services are inclusive and equitable. This includes policies that specifically address the needs of vulnerable populations and promote their rights to high-quality palliative care.
Steinstra and Chalkanoff make any recommendations for us to consider in order to improve care for vulnerable populations?
In fact, they make three recommendations, Lori, that I understood when reading this article. They suggest that enhancing the education and training of healthcare providers to improve healthcare providers' understanding and skill in the delivery of palliative care to these vulnerable populations. That's number one. Secondly, the necessity to involve community organizations and leadership in the planning and delivery of palliative care initiatives will ensure that services are culturally appropriate and accessible. And lastly, they suggest that research is required to identify the specific needs of vulnerable populations and to develop evidence-based strategies for improving palliative care delivery for these groups. And it must be ongoing with continued research, not just, you know, something done and that's the way it is and let's move forward. It's ongoing with new knowledge learned. The article highlights the importance of addressing the disparities in palliative care access and quality for vulnerable populations. And it emphasizes targeted policies, targeted education, and community engagement, which all can make it possible to provide more equitable and compassionate care to those most in need.
Rachel, we talked a bit about the unique challenges and needs of vulnerable populations in the context of palliative care. Let's talk a little bit about how public health partnership with community participation can also play a role. Can you give us an overview of the main findings of this research on access to palliative care?
I sure can. In doing a little bit of research for this podcast that I've been invited to, I read an article by Mills et al., and it's very recent, 2021, and it was called Access to Palliative Care, the Primacy of Public Health Partnership and Community Participation, which suggests access to palliative care is significantly improved through public health partnerships and active community participation. So these collaborations ensure that palliative care services are integrated into broader health systems and are responsive to the needs of the community. And it's so important to be responsive to the specific needs of the community that you're working with. It's not a cookie cutter approach where one process, one policy, one initiative will suit every community and address the needs of every individual in those communities. You really have to adapt it to the needs that are specific to each community.
What do you think motivated the researchers to explore the role of public health partnerships and community participation in palliative care?
I think the motivation was to explore the topic due to the ongoing global challenge of providing equitable access to palliative care. There's numerous articles about providing equitable access to palliative care, even within correctional institutions, within acute care settings, within community care settings, within long-term care settings, retirement homes. Every setting in which individuals receive care has specific needs that need to be addressed to make sure that the care that's being provided is equitable, not just for those that are vulnerable. The research by Mills recognizes the potential of public health partnerships and community involvement as a way to bridge gaps in service delivery. This way, they can improve the quality of life for patients.
How would you describe the current state of palliative care access globally, and what are the most significant challenges?
I think globally, access to palliative care remains inequitable, with significant disparities between high income and low income. Mills suggests this in their article as well. Challenges include the lack of trained healthcare providers. This is a recurrent theme that's in a lot of research. Healthcare providers need that training in order to provide that equitable care. There's inadequate funding. There's funding that starts and then stops. It's not transferable from one to another, or it doesn't roll over into next fiscal years moving forward. And so that stopping and starting breaks down the trust within communities between those that are receiving the care and those that are providing the care. There's limited public awareness about the benefits of palliative care in general.
What are some examples of successful public health partnerships in palliative care?
So I think collaborations between healthcare providers, non-governmental organizations, and governmental bodies are definitely successful partnerships and collaborations that need to be in place to ensure equitable palliative care. For example, the integrated models in countries like the UK and Australia that have demonstrated improved patient outcomes with the more efficient use of resources provincially.
How do these partnerships improve access to palliative care services?
What they do is they pool resources, they standardize care protocols, and they ensure that palliative care services are available within existing healthcare infrastructure. So it's not an adjuvant to, it's included within. It's embedded within, and so it normalizes it, and everything is shared and standardized. It's not, you know, different in one place and another place and in another place, that siloed way of doing things.
Why is community participation crucial in the delivery of palliative care?
I think community participation is absolutely essential because it ensures that palliative care services are culturally appropriate and meet the specific needs of the population. The involvement of community members can lead to better identification of patient needs. It provides a more robust to those that are working with this clientele, and it creates a greater public awareness.
What roles can community members and organizations play in supporting palliative care initiatives?
So I'm not just a nurse, I'm also a community member. You know, as a community member, I can act as a caregiver, I can act as an advocate, and I can also act as an educator. So as a community member, I can help identify individuals who need palliative care. I can provide, you know, home-based care and educate others about the importance and benefits of palliative care services. Being an advocate to equity and palliative care, being an advocate for a palliative approach to care is so essential. And you don't need to be a licensed discipline in order to be a community member that's advocating for the equity of that kind of care.
What are the common barriers to establishing effective public health partnerships in palliative care?
Well, the barriers are numerous. Just to name a few, I've already mentioned funding. And when funding is for a limited amount of time or not ongoing, not renewed, only to one organization and not the others that need to be included in strategies or initiatives, certainly create barriers. If there's insufficient training for healthcare providers, that certainly is a barrier. You can't be doing your due diligence and fulfilling your role as best you could if your level of knowledge is not where it should be. There should be, you know, standardized basic palliative care knowledge for those that are looking after individuals and providing that care. Certainly cultural stigmas around discussing death and palliative care are out there. And there's logistical issues in coordinating care across different providers. You know, that siloed care that I mentioned certainly provides a barrier.
Well, how do you think these barriers can be overcome to ensure better implementation of palliative care programs?
So I definitely think that, you know, when we're thinking about government and partnering with government, there has to be secure, sustainable funding for the offerings that are being provided. There has to be comprehensive training programs for healthcare providers. And that's near and dear to my heart, being a palliative care educator in the role that I play. I think engaging in community education to reduce stigma is very, very important. That's that piece of compassionate communities where we're sharing our knowledge as community providers, making sure that we're dispelling myths and misunderstandings of what a palliative approach to care is all about, and by creating effective care coordinated systems across different organizations, partnering, collaboration, and communicating, I think, are essential.
How do you measure the success of public health partnerships and community participation in palliative care?
I think it can be measured by patients' reports of improved quality of life. I think increased access to palliative care services, more programming, more availability of resources certainly could be a way of measuring. I think reduced hospital admissions could be a way of measuring improved outcomes, and certainly greater patient and family satisfaction, really asking the patients and families for their feedback and using that feedback, whether it's positive or negative, to continue to infuse interventions to make improvements and move things forward, not repeating the same errors that we've done in the past, but listening to what those that are recipients of care are saying.
What metrics or outcomes should be tracked to access the impact of these initiatives?
I'm not an expert on statistics, but I do think, and Mills suggests as well, that some of the metrics, like the number of patients receiving palliative care, could be utilized in some way. The types of services that are provided could be tallied and collected. Patient health outcomes could be gathered. And feedback, again, from patients and families should be tracked.
Rachel, can you share any real-world examples where public health partnerships and community participation significantly improved palliative care access?
As I was researching this, I came across intervention. It's the Compassionate Communities Project in the UK. To me, this could be an example of a real world example of where public health partnership and community participation can improve palliative care access. This compassionate community project engaged community members to support palliative care and involved the integration of palliative care into the primary health services. So primary health, those that are providing that front-facing primary health, it helped improve access and quality of care for palliative care in that initiative.
So based on your findings, what policy recommendations would you make to improve access to palliative care?
So Mills suggests, and I agree here, policies should focus on integrating palliative care into national health plans. Definitely, we know here in Ontario Health is integrating palliative care into their plan. It's not just an oversight. It is integrated within the plans for our country, or sorry, for our province. It ensures funding for palliative care services. It puts it on the radar and keeps it there, keeps it highlighted as a priority so that it's spoken about at different decision-making tables. It helps promote public health partnership and community participation.
How can policymakers support the development of public health partnerships and encourage community participation?
So policymakers can support these initiatives by providing regulatory frameworks, by providing funding, and by providing resources for training healthcare providers and community members.
So what areas of future research do you think are essential to further explore in the context of palliative care access?
There definitely needs to be more exploration into innovative models of care. As I already described, you know, each community, each area within Ontario has unique needs. And so we need to explore different models of care that can be out-of-the-box ideas that can address things for unique communities. I think we need to investigate as well long-term impacts of public health partnerships, really strategize how valuable they are and how to continue to move those partnerships forward. And I think we need to have further research investigating strategies for moving community participation programs forward.
How can researchers build on these strategies to continue improving palliative care delivery?
To build on previous research, we could evaluate existing models. We could gather data on patient outcomes. We could develop a best practice for integrating palliative care into broader health systems. You know, research needs to be driven by a commitment to improve quality of life for patients with serious illness and recognize that this transformative potential of communities and public health collaboration to achieve this goal is absolutely possible. As health service providers, we play a key role in moving these initiatives forward as we strengthen relationships within and between health service provision organizations. So we may think that a lot of this is big and grand and it requires, you know, tons of money and research development, but we as health service providers within our own unique organization play a role in moving and strengthening relationships between different health service provider organizations. It's everybody's responsibility within the scope of your role, within your position, within your organization. And even frontline providers play a role in that partnership development.
What lessons can be learned and applied to other regions?
So I think throughout their research, you know, Mills et al. Gained a deeper understanding of the systemic barriers to palliative care and the innovative solutions that can emerge from community and public health partnerships. They suggest the importance of adapting models to local context, so making it specific to the culture, to the community in which the needs are. You know, as I said already, not a cookie cutter approach where one size fits all. I think one of the primary takeaways is that public health partnerships and community partnerships and community participation are essential for improving access to palliative care. Collaborative efforts can lead to more comprehensive, culturally appropriate care, and the outcome is effective palliative care services. Individuals and organizations can get involved by advocating for palliative care, participating in community initiatives, and supporting policies that promote integrated and inclusive palliative care services. I think there are significant key actions that we as health service providers can take. I think, you know, we need to advocate for policies that ensure equitable access to palliative care services. This includes, when we're able, working with policymakers to create and improve legislation that supports funding, resources, programs, being involved at decision-making tables that are moving new initiatives forward. I think we need to educate healthcare providers. We need to advocate for appropriate education to healthcare providers about the importance of palliative care, training them to deliver culturally competent care. This includes understanding the unique needs and challenges faced by vulnerable populations and tailoring care to meet their needs. I think as health service providers, we have to engage in community organizations and we need to be leaders to understand the specific needs of vulnerable populations. We need to collaborate with groups within the community to develop and implement palliative care programs that are culturally sensitive and accessible. I think we can develop and implement integrated care models that combine palliative care with other health and social services. That is so important, that partnership development, that you don't have to go to one organization for one thing, one organization for another, and a different organization for a third item. It has to be integrated, in which social services, health services, and palliative care are all within the same entity and can be accessed at the same time. I think we need to increase the availability of palliative care services. For underserved areas, this could involve setting up things like mobile clinics, using telehealth services that we already have, improving home-based care programs to reach those that may not have easy access to traditional healthcare facilities, especially if they're in rural areas. I think we need to ensure that there is robust support systems for patients and their families. This includes that grief and bereavement component, offering counseling and support services and educational resources to families to help them navigate the complexities of living with a serious illness and end-of-life care. I think we need to utilize interdisciplinary teams better that include doctors, nurses, social workers, spiritual care, and other allied health professionals. This ensures a holistic approach to palliative care that addresses the physical, emotional, social, and spiritual needs of patients. We mentioned a lot about conducting research, being involved in research to identify the specific palliative care needs of vulnerable populations. There is a lot more research to be done in order to be able to develop programs that are going to be ongoing and effective. And then certainly one of the big things is, you know, advocating for financial assistance, bursaries, programs that are funded to help vulnerable populations afford palliative care services so that it's equitable. You know, using grants, partnerships, charitable organizations, looking at whatever it is that we can partner with in order to be able to provide some of those resources to individuals.
Well, thank you so much, Rachel. You really left us with a lot to think about, especially just how we as healthcare providers and communities can advocate together and really make a difference in this, in the vulnerable populations with palliative care. Your insights were not only enlightening, but deeply meaningful to our listeners who are navigating themselves through these issues. So I just wanted to say thank you so much for joining us on Beyond the Stethoscope to discuss these crucial topics.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me. And I hope that, you know, there's at least one little pearl of knowledge that you take away from today. You know, it takes a team to make change, and collaboration, communication is key. And we need to keep moving forward and recognize that not everybody can access services the same way we can. And we need to be able to meet them where they are in order to ensure that it's equitable. And the key is it can't be equal. It can't be, I'm going to give to this community this much and I'm going to give this community the same amount, and then it's going to make the care equal. It's about equitable. And sometimes you need to give a little bit more to some and a little bit less to others, but the outcome remains the same. People are still getting that equitable care. Some may not need as much. Others may need way more.
Thank you very much, Rachel.
You're welcome.